to agenda item 11, hatchery policy C3619. This is a review briefing with public comment. Mr. Warren, good morning.
Good morning, Chair Carpenter. I will attempt as normal to share my screen. Maybe I'll stop sharing. Sorry, I have a pop-up over the top of the button I need to push, so.
Come on, Ron, you should be a pro at this by now.
Commissioner Kehoe, I know I should be. I'm showing my, when I pop up full screen, I can no longer see anything behind it to be able to share my screen. Nikki, you have any quick insights? Do you want to open this for me, Nikki?
I can, yes.
It's not very many slides. I can just say next slide each time if you don't mind.
I do not mind.
Thank you. Sorry about that. I do have a couple of other attachments or a couple of other things that I would like to show the commission as we walk through the presentation, and that'll be a bit clunky. Maybe I'll do it at the end, but we'll get through it the best we can. So sorry for the last minute notice on that, Nikki. You're doing a great job, by the way. Appreciate all your efforts. So, Chair Carpenter, commissioners, directors, Ron Warren, Director of Fish Policy for the department, here to provide an update on the hatchery and fishery reform policy, 3619. Next slide. And today, hope to just cover a quick overview of that policy, the draft, anadromous salmon and steelhead hatchery policy, provide an update and brief you on some of the comments we've received, give you an update on the SEPA work that we are undergoing so that we have SEPA completed by the time the commission may take final action in case you were to adopt this. I've also got an update of one of the addendums to the policy, which was the HGMP. At the last meeting, I did not have timelines for which we would complete those that were not in areas where we had listed species. I've filled that out, and I'd like to show it to commissioners. That's a minor thing. I had described that we thought it was going to be about a three-year process to complete the other HGMPs. I've extended that a little bit just because of the continued work that we have with those that are turned into NOAA and that we're working on with co-managers. So I've tried to give us a little bit more time on some of them. And then discuss next steps, what we're going to do relative to any public comment. I know that that was a discussion at the Fish Committee, so prepared to talk about that as well. Next slide. So again, today, we've been 2 years in a thorough review of the hatchery and fishery reform policy. We've had extensive work done by some of the best scientists this state has, and maybe a broader, the industry has in staff that we have here in our science, in our implementation work. We know that we've got a long way to go relative to what data we have on the west side of Washington so that we more thoroughly understand the effects that we might have on wild populations and how we achieve some of the standards that are found in those HGMPs and found through the hatchery risk documents that NOAA provides co-managers for operation of facilities. Certainly the east side of the state of Washington is heads and tails above the west side relative to the information known and how they track and monitor hatchery effects. So the anadromous salmon and steelhead hatchery policy, the draft was approved at the August 1st day of the July-August commission meeting. And since that time, it has been out for public review. I did go back and reread the news release that was done from that commission meeting. And I quite honestly did not put enough emphasis or ask for enough emphasis in that press release to point to the fact that we needed public comment and do not believe that we provided thorough information to the public. I take responsibility for that. I have a final say in those news releases before they go out. And that was a major oversight on my part. So to commissioners and all your hard work, my apologies for that. Next slide. So we are working through SEPA. You heard the SEPA results from the Columbia River. We believe that we owe it to ourselves and to the public to run those government decisions through this lens to make sure that we are evaluating the environmental impacts that may result from our decisions or your decisions in these events. We have completed the checklist. I believe it got turned in last night late. So I'm sure that it will get posted and some results we'll know about. Depending on language modifications as we progress, if any, we may have to make some addendums to that, but we are primed and ready to react quickly to do that, to make sure that you have the information when we get to the final decision point for that. Next slide. So just a list of public comments and suggestions that we received from the public between the August 1st meeting and just recently as we could, all of the thorough and well-written letters that we received. I know that during the Fish Committee, I know that many of you have read these, but just genetic and ecological impacts, that the selective gear, all H goals are not addressed, making sure that we use best available science. I think that, as I covered in the Fish Committee, I think that people's hesitancy to support the draft policy as written is that they don't feel like there's a backstop or an outcome that they can measure because of the lack of specificity in some of the measures that have been used relative to hatchery reform actions and principles that we've adopted in the past. I won't read them all. Some of the ones that I didn't necessarily agree with, but I'll leave that up to the commission as it's your policy, that it wasn't in line with the mandate. I think that the intent of the policy is to certainly meet the mandates of the commission and the department and preserve, protect, and perpetuate and manage those species appropriately without harm. I think that the continuation of scientific practices within the department will continue to guide us towards proper operation of our hatchery facilities. Without the specificity, that's what we find in the hatchery risk documents and what we describe or try to describe in the HGMPs as we submit them. Certainly we have the meeting economic stability or local economies and wanting to watch out for those folks who want to see us raise more fish in appropriate places, and then the lack of focus on wild fish. Again, that I think that's just another common statement relative to the maybe the lack of outcomes that we specific outcomes that are not in the policy. Next slide. So this was my original intent. I think that we will likely have further conversation as public comment comes forward today. So I will, Nikki, next slide, and then I'll ask you, it should be the end. So maybe stop sharing so I can share a screen so I can show commissioners the completed document, the addendum. So commissioners, this is the status and schedule for completion of the hatchery and genetic management plans called for in the document. The different color codes, I don't have this set up to lock those in place. So those are going to disappear, but those words, ESA permitting complete, so all that green color currently in consultation, you'll see that completed by 12/31 of 23 and 12/31 of 24 in the light blue and the light green colors, not submitted. I've got some additional information on those if we need to understand those in a better way. Pre-consultation and then under co-management review. So believe that the documents are near completion, just have to have them reviewed. I'll just scroll down. Many of the HGMPs across the state are complete. A certain number, when we get into the Puget Sound area or in consultation, some of the coastal facilities are where I tried to go through, and these are arbitrarily picked, but HGMPs completed by certain dates, and my rationale for delaying the completion until the 2024 for Willapaw is that the possibility of the Willapaw policy being modified into next year, and then what information do we have to have to report back and to assure that we are implementing that policy that the commission gives us if they've changed that. So again, most of the uncompleted or completed by 2023, 2024 are in Region 6, mainly in on the coast, but mainly in the Chehalis Basin and the Willapaw Bay drainage. The not submitted pieces, those are pieces that are nearing completion or that are tied up because someone else like BPA has to, they're those functions of that, and they have to submit those. We've got our portions complete. They just have not submitted those as of yet. And then the Deschutes, that's actually under consultation with co-managers, and we continue to work on that. So that and the under co-management review, again, I think are those that are just that. We've exchanged documents. We've talked about programs and had those meetings, and just await the process and the timing to complete those. Before I stop sharing, any questions about that document?
Question?
I can reshare if it pertains to that document, Commissioner McIsaac.
Commissioner McIsaac, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just a question about the availability of this document. You were scrolling through it pretty quickly there. Is this in the commission meeting materials or on the website anywhere? And if not, could when do you think?
I think that Nikki can have this posted by probably the close of the commission meeting. This is the exact document, other than I put the dates of completion in. I noticed that as I completed the presentation late this week, and wanted to make sure that this was a complete document, so that as we move forward with what I thought was going to be some additional public comment, that the package was complete per the request and direction of the commission.
Thank you for completing it. Just want to know when and where I can be able to find it.
Yep, it will be in the Hatchery Reform section of the commission pages under the rest of the available work that has been completed. Thank you, Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you.
Commissioner Thorburn has her hand up, and then I have a question, Ron, if I may. Commissioner Thorburn.
Thank you. Ron, just to understand the process for completion, do all HGMPs require NMFS review and approval? Is there a difference if the hatchery is producing in a way that doesn't interact with any of our listed stocks? Or do they all require the same level of review and approval?
So, Chair Carpenter, Commissioner Thorburn, thank you for the question. I don't believe that they all require the same level of approval currently, but I do believe that the only reason that is because that NOAA, the state agency and NOAA, have always viewed those hatcheries where there was not ESA as a lower priority, and we never get to catch up and do the needed work to document what those hatchery operations and how they're modified, how they meet ESA standards, even though there's not a possibly direct interaction with ESA. So even though these HGMPs may not, these that are not in ESA listed areas, these coastal facilities, they may not be a requirement to put in. I think it's a great idea to have it documented that we have operational plans through the HGMPs and have them ready to submit if NOAA were in a situation where they could accept them and review them and approve them. I believe that to be the best practice. Have not had that conversation with NOAA. It a little bit premature just to see if the policy passes through the commission process, and that's a direction, but we would certainly do that. And if NOAA could give us that time for review, even if there wasn't a formal approval process, to make sure that we were meeting the standards as if we had ESA, I think would give us all some assurance that we were operating in the best available science environment, as well as the best operational practices, screening, water quality, those types of things that they review for us.
Thank you. I agree. I think it's the best practice, and appreciate the approach. I think it allows for standardization of our practices. So I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Hey, Ron, have you completed your presentation? I had making some notes here, and I might have missed something. Are you at questions now?
I am at questions, sir.
Okay, apologize for that. My question, I may have missed it, regarding the extension of the open public comment period. Could you, if you haven't already spoke to that, could you revisit that for me?
So, Commissioner Carpenter, I was hoping that I have a document that I'd like to share that later, but I know we're going to get some comment from public about the extension of comment. We certainly received that from many of the people who commented to us. And I was hoping that that could be kind of a next steps guidance from the commission. And I've got a suggested pathway forward. I don't know if you'd rather me show that now.
No. Let's go with your original strategy, Ron. And thank you for that. That's fine. I see two hands up, Commissioner Baker and then Commissioner McKaysey.
This is Commissioner Baker. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thanks. So, Ron, not directly related to the HDMPs or the extension of the comment period, this is just an off-the-cuff question, but what we are hearing more and more now is that for sure, conclusory, NOAA is going to make us start shutting down or decreasing our hatchery production, especially in the Columbia River in 2023, unless we do things differently. And what I wondered is, I'm wondering if we have had any communication from NOAA. I'd just like to get an opinion from you about what those comments are based on, or if you've heard them.
Chair Carpenter, Commissioner Baker, thank you. It's a pretty complex situation. Most of it is based upon the hatchery risk document and the HDMPs that are submitted, and then the final biological opinion by NOAA relative to the Lower Columbia River production. And prior to the focused efforts on southern resident killer whales, for instance, we were asked to or told to reduce production at key facilities. So one of those key facilities is Klamath Falls. Klamath Falls currently releases 7 million Chinook a year, and I believe the program was scheduled to go to 3 million. In the past, if something like that happened, what we would do is we would look to other facilities to take on that additional burden. As you, the commission, may remember from past annual briefings on hatchery policies, we've had a difficult time with facilities in the Lower Columbia River, Grays River and Olokoman specifically. Both have had large amounts of bed sediment movement, deteriorated facilities to the point where they're no longer operational in the locations that they are within the watersheds. Why it's so important to have the capital work that you have to have an independent person go through and not only look at what our facilities are, where we could expand, have a consolidated effort of information in one location, but to also help us look at those possibilities of facilities where you could raise additional fish that don't have harm or minimal harm or risk to the natural counterparts. So that's the fear. I think that we continue to talk to NOAA about the implementation of those reductions and see what our options are, see if we could go other places. I think that it was mentioned earlier about conversations with NOAA about different strategies. I think we have to look at what we can do and what's going on in those key watersheds where one or two hatchery fish straying into a watershed that doesn't have a program or has a small wild population is where that one or two fish that stray there are creating the PIAS problem for us. And so there may be focused efforts for habitat restoration work there that improve that wild population, or truly integrated or recovery actions that could occur to where you have a very small enhancement of a restoration program that then allow that one or two fish to stray there without a a great deal of risk. Whether those things are possible with the current infrastructure that we have to try to evaluate that to continue to look at options to meet the specific goals of the commission for the $50 million that we were looking to raise for southern resident killer whales, and to make sure that we're trying to achieve our recovery goals as well as maintaining the economic viability of our fishing industry in the state and properly operate facilities relative to the Endangered Species Act.
Thank you for that, Ron. Commissioner McIsaac?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I was just going to respond to your original question and hope that when we get done with public comment, that we can come back and have a discussion about guidance on where to go from here.
Are you referencing the length of the open public comment period? Is that what you were speaking to, Don?
No, I was just saying whenever we get done with the open public, the comment period on this agenda item, that we come back and have a discussion, a commission guidance on what to do about the process, the 30-day extension that you talked about, and maybe a few other things as well.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Any other questions of Ron? Well, you did a good job, Ron.
Thank you,
sir. We will now go to open public comment. We will now take questions and comments from participants. Please remember everyone is currently muted, so if you have a question, please raise your hand. If you are on a computer, the raise hand button appears under your name. If you are dialed into phone only, please press star 9 and wait to hear the you have been unmuted statement, and that is your indication that it is now your turn to speak. Nikki?
Currently, we have two hands up. First is Lee Blankenship, followed by Alan Chapman. Go ahead, Lee. Make sure you're unmuted.
Sorry, I was muted.
No problem.
Opportunity to provide comments on the new hatch reform policy. My name is Lee Blankenship. I retired from WDFW as a senior scientist and previously served as a WDFW representative and independent scientist on the HSRG. When the hatch reform policy review started, the underlying assumptions given were that there was new science that contradicted the HSRG science-based recommendations and that these recommendations significantly reduced hatchery production. Subsequent reviews by the Washington State Academy of Sciences and your own staff clearly showed there was not new science and emphasized the importance of the HSRG science-based recommendations. The staff report also debunked the myth that you hear about every commission open mic on this subject from the Fish Committee or the full commission, that the HSRG recommendations reduced hatchery production by 100 million fish. Again, your own staff reported it was only 100,000 reduction from HSRG recommendations statewide. The current draft of the new policy may sound good and state its highest priority is to advance the conservation and recovery of wild salmon and steelhead, but from a science perspective, it is inadequate and falls short of that goal or purpose. Instead, it promotes status quo management and largely ignores the primary tenet of hatchery reform. In short, that primary tenet involves reducing the negative ecological interactions between hatchery and wild fish, along with reducing hatchery strays on the spawning ground to reasonable levels to avoid negative genetic interactions. With the necessity to be brief, I'll just highlight two examples of the current policy that falls short from this science-based perspective. First, the legislative mandate and overarching priority of the Department and Commission is to preserve, protect, and perpetuate fish and wildlife and conserve fish and wildlife in a manner that does not impair the resource. The current draft policy relies on ESA and specifically HGMPs to cover the negative ecological and genetic effects imposed by hatchery fish on wild fish. Approved HGMPs can allow hatcheries to have a negative impact on listed populations as long as they do not push them towards extinction. Approved HGMPs do not meet the requirements necessary for recovery or sustainable fisheries. I hope you see the difference between avoiding extinction and the legal responsibility and the legislative mandate. The second shortcoming example in the draft is in item 7, which considers the balance and risks of balance of risks and benefits. It states the highest level of protection from possible negative effects of hatchery programs to wild populations shall be provided to those populations that do not have a substantial genetic modification from past hatchery practices or are now in a healthy condition. First, it is not a matter of whether hatcheries have a possible negative effect on wild fish. The science is abundantly clear they do. What is important is how to avoid those interactions. Secondly, only protecting the highest level of protection, the few healthy wild populations or those with little genetic modifications from hatchery practices, severely limits the number of populations that could be rebuilt. We would not be surrounded with ESA listings if such populations existed. Most Pacific Northwest fisheries are limited by weak stock management. If we are not rebuilding weak stocks, no matter how many hatchery fish we release, our fisheries will continue to be limited and not sustainable. Thank you.
Commissioner McIsaac has a question, Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Blankenship, for your past contributions to this question as an agency scientist and as an HSRG member, too. They've been significant, and let me join all the people who appreciate that. I want to ask you a question about the science falling short and maybe a specific question about what language you might recommend. But before I do that, let me say one thing about guideline number 7 and get your reaction. You mentioned that quite extensively, and one of the intents of what's described there in guideline number 7 is to take care of the best that you have left. So it's not, these populations may not, if they may not be ESA listed. If they're in the world of an ESU that is listed, they may be very strong populations. North Fork and Lewis Falls Chinook, maybe some populations in the Salduck River. Anyway, there are places around the state where there's some really good wild populations. And the intent of number 7 there was, beyond just recovery, beyond just protecting for endangerment for extinction, but give the highest level of protection to the best that are left. Don't lose the best that are out there that are left. Don't hurt those. Keep those as strong as possible. So if that was the intent, maybe you didn't read it that way, if that was the intent, do you have any comment about that intent before I ask you about a specific recommendation from you?
Thanks for the question. No, I totally agree with protecting those good populations that we still have. It's just that we don't have very many. And I don't disagree that we need to protect those, but I think we also need to afford more protection to those where genetic modification from hatcheries has occurred. Because if you give the wild populations a chance, they're very plastic. They will evolve, but continually being flooded with hatchery genetics doesn't let them evolve. And we really need that local, that ability for the local populations to evolve naturally or adapt local adaptation. And the way I read it, the populations are already in trouble, which limit are sustainable fisheries because they're limited to weak stock management. So while we have nice healthy populations, we're not harvesting all of that potential because of the weak stock management. But so it's those other populations that I read into that number seven is, well, we're not so concerned about those. And for sustainable fisheries, we need to do that.
Yeah, okay. Well, thanks for that observation. And you know, I might even throw Hanford Reach upriver brights into this good population, 100,000, hundreds of thousands of surplus fish being produced from that wild population. We got to make sure we protect that one. However, if the intent on number seven was take care of the best, it was policy guideline number four that got into your question of let's try to recover the other ones and let's certainly not let anything go downhill. And so your testimony seems to indicate that in, I think it's number four, which gets into the provisions of the HGMP, where this is where there's supposed to be the detail to achieve that particular intent. And then the previous ones talk about balancing and things like that. But in number four is kind of where the rubber hits the road inside the hatchery genetic management plan. What is in there to make us feel good that we are going to be recovering populations that can be recovered? And if there are some that maybe have nothing to do with hatcheries or harvest, maybe it's a habitat problem that are really going in the wrong direction because of habitat problems. What do we do about that? So inside number four, you say the science seems to fall short. I don't think there was ever any intent to ignore any science, but rather utilize all the good published science and the emerging science. So I was going to ask you if you had any specific recommendations for language in number four that would help improve people's comfort with what I think the original intent was. Now, later we may hear something about an extension of the public comment period that would maybe allow you to put some recommendations in writing for language. But do you have any reaction to any specific language changes that could be put in here to solve that riddle that you perceive as not being solved right now?
Yes, I think that's my biggest issue with the new policy is it doesn't have specific, say, to stray rates, which were in controlling stray rates that were in the previous policy. It's not a matter of what Ron mentioned of one or two hatchery strays go into a system and throw it out of the balance. It's not one or two. I mean, the previous stray rates went up to 30% of the population dependent upon 30% stray rate into that population, depending upon the importance of the specific wild population. My biggest concern is relying on the HGMPs. The HGMPs do not get you to where you have sustainable fisheries and recovery. They're aimed at, from an ESA standpoint, to avoid extinction. And even that's not happening. Since we've had the listings in the 1990s, stocks, those wild stocks that are listed in aggregate have declined another 25%. So we're still headed towards extinction. So even with the current system, it's not working. And we need to get to sustainable fisheries, not just avoid extinction or get removed from an ESA listing. We need to go beyond that. And I think looking at stray rates is the biggest issue, at least from a science perspective, of how do you control that? It's so frustrating to me. In the Lower Columbia, for example, the HSRG provided recommendations in 2005. That maintained the current production and had a slight increase in harvest opportunity clear back in 2005, which have greatly been reduced since then. And the reason, but those recommendations weren't followed by the department, even though they were in your policy at that time. And NIPS was forced to step in and reduce production to do that just across the board for Mitchell Act hatcheries. And it wasn't necessary. There were places that we mentioned earlier that a move that Ron said we need to team up with nymphs to look where we can move fish where there's not an effect and decrease in others. And that's what the HSRG recommendations did. But they weren't implemented, and it's where we are now. And I this first time I heard when Commissioner Baker said she's been hearing about further reductions. I mean, that's the reason that we'll probably see more reductions is because we are still headed towards extinction under ESA.
Lee, hold on a minute. I think we got a couple other commissioners, at least maybe two. Commissioner Linville, did you want to speak? And then Commissioner, no, okay. Commissioner Thorburn.
Hi, thank you. I think you started into some of this, but I heard you say in response to Commissioner McIsaac that there were previously stray rates up to 30%, which implied to me that there has been some control of stray rates. So I was wondering if you could elaborate on that, because subsequently your testimony kind of sounded like, no, it's still a big issue. But if they have been better controlled, what is it that's led to that? And what is it in the policy proposal that concerns you that stray rates will continue to be an overarching problem?
When I mentioned the 30% rate, it was under the HSRG recommendation, you could have up to 30% stray rate depending upon the importance of a particular stock. If it was a real important stock, it would be down to 10% stray rate that was acceptable to avoid really bad genetic modifications from hatchery fish. So, and what's happened is those were the recommendations in the policy to follow those HSRG recommendations. But they weren't followed, even the percentages up to 30%. The stray rates were higher than that. So what happened was NIMS had to step in and just reduce hatchery production. But there's other ways to avoid those negative interactions. You don't have to just reduce hatchery production to do that.
Okay, any other questions or comments for Mr. Blankenship? Seeing none, Lee, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Have a good day. Nikki, next.
Next, we've got Alan Chapman, followed by Greg King. Go ahead, Alan.
Yes, good morning, Chairman Carpenter and Commissioners. My name is Alan Chapman. I am currently on the WIRA 1 Salmon Recovery Staff Team and on the WIRA 1 Planning Unit representing fishers. Greatly appreciate the revisions to the original policy, which we feel limited unduly hatcheries required to meet certain treaty obligations. The Nooksack Chinook earlies are critical to the delisting of the Puget Sound Chinook. And these stocks have maintained genetic separation despite the hatchery production introduction and previous hatchery programs with Puget Sound, Green River Chinook. The habitat in the WIRA 1 region cannot produce the naturally sustainable harvest required to meet both treaty rights and the needs of all fishers. You basically can't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. The problem is land use policies and the pressures of an increasing human population without a clear indication and actions to protect priority habitats. The hatchery supplementation is ensuring genetic preservation of the critical stocks, and it is demonstrated that the current habitat can't support a natural population, but it shows that the stock is hanging on regardless. It had been reduced to levels below, say, 50. The HDMPs have been drafted to meet conditions and increase the harvestable surplus in this region. And salmon recovery activities are targeted towards increasing the natural production to allow access to hatchery fish and buffer impacts on natural stocks in other fisheries. Funding is necessary to implement these improvements and the monitoring required to see that the hatchery actions are successful. My understanding of the HSR, the HSRG position was basically that hatcheries needed to be evaluated regularly to ensure that they were meeting their objectives, not just continue doing the same old thing, which had led to some bad practices. Again, appreciate the improvements in the policy and would appreciate an update on the status of the Nooksack Samish HGMPs, which I thought were fairly well developed 2 years ago. Thank you.
Any questions or comments of Mr. Chapman? Regarding Mr. Chapman's request for an update on the Nooksack HGMP, could you have somebody on staff make contact with him, or how would you propose doing that?
Thank you, Chair Carpenter. Alan, I can drop you a line. I can find out first part of the week from staff where those are in the queue of going to NOAA and drop you a line so you have an understanding of that information.
Thank you.
You bet. Good to hear from you.
Thank you for the comments, Alan. Nikki, next, please.
Next, you got Greg King, followed by Jessica Helsley. Go ahead, Greg.
Good morning, Chair Carpenter, Commission, Director Suswan, and staff. HSRG, as we know, is a tool, not a rule. We've got some of the finest scientists in the world, like Mr. Warren has pointed out, with the department, NOAA Fisheries, and the tribal scientists. I'd like to make some statements about the Clackamas study that was not introduced. I don't know if the commission got to read it or look at it. I've had conversations with Ian Quarters, the man that did the study. It shows that late wild winter steelhead were not affected by summer steelhead in the study. It's the newest study out there. It's 2018. It kind of debunks or does debunk the Hood River study on the effects of hatchery fish on wild fish. If we heard Commissioner McIsaac's statement yesterday about the coho jack count at Bonneville, and talking with Ryan Lothrop, he pointed out that we had a record run on one day over the Columbia River, over Bonneville Dam on coho. And this is a hatchery supplementation program by the Yakima tribe. We look at the Johnson Creek on the snake. We look at the summer Chinook program, which was a supplementation program in the late 80s. And then we look at the Callis River, my home river. Zero wild fish on the Callis River. It was an introduction program. And now we're looking at possible delisting of coho salmon. These are all hatchery stocks. All hatchery stocks that are being used. We want to fix habitat. We want to work on habitat and fix habitat. But what are we going to put in that habitat if we don't have hatchery fish? Hatchery fish, in most studies, show that they are a key role in the recovery of wild fish. We need to produce some fish for orca whale. And if we kick this thing down the road with more public comment, we're just kicking it down the road. And we are not going to establish a prey fish for orca whale. I've been to these meetings, to the beginning of this HSRG review. Sports were held out of the meeting in Seattle, where all the wild fish people got to go, but sports didn't go. We were at South Sound College, and we were all told that we would be sent an email to and invited to a roundtable in Seattle. We weren't sent that. We were held out of that. While the wild fish people, they got to have all their public comment and on all their roundtable, and we were shut out. Thank you, Frank Urbeck, for finding out and letting us know that we finally got in, and we never even got to speak. So we have been coming to the commission meetings or in the form of Zoom to let the commission know that we have scientists that are capable of moving on with these hatchery genetic plans that Ron has so graciously posted up there and working hard on this. I don't believe we need more public comment. We need to move forward on this policy. Are we going to kick it down the road and spend 8 years on it like we did the Columbia River one? I just think we need to move on with this policy and get all the good scientists together and start producing some fish for orca whale and sports in our fisheries. We're losing time. So anyway, those are my comments today. Thank you, Larry.
Okay. Any questions or comments for Greg? Hearing none. Greg, thank you for your comments. Nikki, next, please.
Next we've got Jessica Helsley, followed by David Moskowitz. Go ahead, Jessica. Make sure you're unmuted.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Carpenter and commissioners. I am Jessica Helsley. I'm the Washington Director of the Wild Salmon Center, and it's great to be before you all again today. Our organization submitted written comments on recommended changes and considerations to the proposed revisions in C-3619. And I would like to reiterate a few of those points this morning. First, as a follow-up to Mr. Blankenship's testimony and Commissioner McIsaac's request for language, I would like to point out that our written comments include recommended revisions to language in item number 7, as well as recommended additions to improve section 4. The effort to obtain public outreach by the Commission to get comments on this proposed policy has been less than adequate. As an individual representing an organization that was participating in this process when it initiated, I can say firsthand that somewhere midway through the process, it fell off the map a little bit. And as such, we recommend that the Commission conduct a broader solicitation for public comment and extend the comment period at least until October 31st, so that all Washingtonians are aware of their opportunity to participate in this public process. We support policies undergoing routine review, evaluation, and adaptation to ensure that they meet their objective and the department's mandate. However, we were quite surprised at how little the outcomes from the scientific review and staff expertise and recommendations were incorporated into the revisions of this policy. There is a lack of the commission and department's mandate to preserve, protect, and perpetuate fish and wildlife, either as reference or in the general tone of the newly proposed policy. Using only a National Marine Fisheries Service approved HDMP and compliance with provisions of ESA as the commission vision of an adequate hatchery program falls short of your responsibilities. Utilizing a jeopardy determination as a threshold does not constitute what is necessary for recovery or restoration of a population. There is nothing in this new revised policy or the HDMP template that provides guidance for hatcheries to examine mechanisms they can take to actually help recover or restore a population. The revised policy as proposed is short-sighted and wholly misses the opportunity for the commission to lead and direct the department to prepare as an agency for the changes in environmental conditions and species adaptations needed for climate change. To successfully rebuild salmon and steelhead populations, we need salmon and steelhead that are adapting with their watersheds. What is very evident in the Hatchery and Fishery Reform Policy Implementation Assessment Report is a lack of implementation of the original policy. Failure to implement any policy does not serve to undermine the integrity of the policy itself, but rather the credibility of both the department and the commission. Performance and reporting of hatchery programs should be strengthened within the revised policy to ensure that an adopted policy is actually implemented. With that, thank you very much for your time.
Any questions or comments of Jessica? Hearing none, Jessica, thank you for your comments. Nikki, next, please.
Next, we've got David Moskowitz, followed by Larry Pryor. Go ahead, David. Make sure you're unmuted.
Thank you. This is David Moskowitz with Conservation Angler. Just want to check that you can hear me.
Yep, we got you.
Okay, thank you very much. The Conservation Angler appreciates the Washington Commission's hard work on some big issues this weekend and really every weekend of the month, every month of the year. You guys are very hardworking and we really appreciate it. This review of the fishery and hatchery policy 3619 is helpful. It's timely, but it's been very concerning, particularly regarding the process, which we believe has been wrong since day one in June 2018. And I've spoken to this before, but at the time there was a briefing, there was public comment, and then there was guidance and action by the commission with no opportunity to comment on that guidance or action. And it may not be an administrative rule in the classic sense. It clearly set standards for Washington, and the public did not have the opportunity to comment on that action. When we go to the process, the draft workshop memo by WDFW staff was actually not shared with citizens until they indicated they were prepared to file a public records request. The scientific paper is being pushed to pursue a balancing of policy goals that are not scientific, such as economics. That is, if you're going to ask for a scientific review, you need to have a scientific paper. And to that regard, the Conservation Angler would support and incorporate testimony by Mr. Blankenship and Ms. Helsley this morning. Regarding the SEPA, supposedly it's meant to inform the process, inform and guide agencies in Washington. And so far we haven't seen it. There's note in the presentation that the SEPA has been completed, but it's not available for review. And where is the public process on that review? That seems upside down and backwards. This is the SEPA is where the suspension of the three HSRG guidelines should be evaluated, and the public needs to have a chance to weigh in on that. And as Ms. Helsley eloquently stated, the failure that has been determined to be in policy 3619 is not the policy itself, but its implementation. Focusing just on healthy stocks really ignores the importance of small populations. And our fishery management, particularly in the Columbia River, where you cut off the beginnings and the ends of runs on certain dates and managed by different standards, is a way to eliminate diversity. And this policy has to address those kinds of concerns. These fish do not fit into neat, tidy boxes by date. And we are losing important elements of genetic diversity, life history diversity. And I think the way our steelhead populations are declining is a clear indication that we are not addressing these important wild fish issues by not addressing that more completely. If hatchery practices work, we would have huge harvests in the commercial and sport fisheries, and ESA listed fish would be recovered. And that's not the case. In fact, fishers are being shut down because hatcheries aren't even getting their broodstock back. And we're not seeing recovery. We're not seeing recovery of listed fish. Supplementation, all of the talk about how supplementation is working is clearly not, if we stop those supplementation procedures, we stopped adding hatchery fish, would those populations stay steady or would they decline? And most of the science shows they would decline. Those are the facts. This policy is not ready for prime time. It's far from it. And the policy, the process has not been proper. And we appreciate the ability to comment on this. We appreciate your hard work, you know, meeting over the course of the weekend so citizens can participate as well as people like myself representing organization. And we're happy to take any questions that the commissioners may have. Thank you.
Any questions? Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks for the testimony. with regard to the process, you may be referring to the April commission meeting or the June commission meeting. I would just note that both of those cases, I believe the Fish Committee was an open meeting, and I think they probably there was probably public comment at those, and there was public comment on the main commission items as well, and the materials are posted on the website as soon as they're developed. So be that as it may about the past process, I do think if one is following the issues closely, there are plenty of opportunities to participate in this matter at least as good as other matters. But where we're at now, though, is the process of considering public comment on the public review draft. So that's the draft that's out there for public review. And you've made a couple of comments here. And I wasn't quite clear on why you were advocating for an extension on the public comment period. So I wonder if you could speak to that.
Thank you, Commissioner McIsaac. The materials, I guess it gets down to whether this draft is a policy that's going to end up with rules and standards, or whether it's just a policy. And I think that lack of clear indication makes it difficult to speak to a policy that may not, it's not clear how it affects the resulting management decisions. And perhaps I'm more familiar with the way Oregon does it, but when you don't have actual administrative rules coming out of a policy, it seems very incomplete.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, anything else for Mr. Moskowitz? Hearing none. David, thank you for your call today and your comments. Have a good day. Nikki, next, please.
Next, we've got, excuse me. Next, we have Larry Pryor, followed by Stephanie Vallea again. Go ahead, Larry.
Hi, and thanks again for the opportunity. You know, I made some comments last time about on the Hatchery Reform policy side of things. In regards, one of the things in the public comment, you always see increased production. You hear very little about how are the hatcheries, are they successful, and what can we do to make them successful. HSRG clearly made recommendations that says make your hatchery successful and how to judge them. You know, you always hear about increasing production, but not about are those hatcheries successful? Are they efficient? And that when you, I think to some extent, when you hear me say or anybody say that, that you hear dollar signs coming from us, and that's not necessarily the case, that there's a lot of just technical and practices that need to be changed to make your hatchery successful. When we get to the Willapa Bay policy, there's a fine example there about how not looking at hatchery successfulness and just shifting production around help create the failure of a program. And so, you know, within your hatchery reform policy, are your hatcheries successful? I tell you, because I've looked at a lot of them, looking at the SCRs and low returns, and that they perform terribly below, what Tribal's been doing and some other facilities. Make your hatchery successful, and part of your hatchery reform needs to be. And then, you know, you can go from increasing production, or once they're successful, maybe reducing production, but make them, evaluate, see that they're successful, efficient. And I don't see that going on anywhere. And I get into a number of different hatcheries. That's my comment. I am going to expand on that a little bit about the Willapa Bay, and just when they shifted production down without looking at what the hatchery efficiencies were, that it just ruined the fishery here, and that why it's an example of why that is so important, improvement. I could go on and on about. We can talk about the Cowlitz, we can talk about the Lewis, we can talk about on and on, but, making your hatchery successful. One of the things, I do want to talk briefly here about HEMPs, one of the things that I think that needs to be adapted somewhere in your HEMP process now, particularly you talked yesterday about climate change and climate changing models, and that climate change, what are the causes are a real effect, and that HEMPs are generally a static process for a number of years. But with the climate change models, that there are, water flow shifting that needs to be consideration nowadays within the model of the HEMP here for hatchery management, and give them some flexibility to adapt to that, because it's
going to be. Larry, you're at time.
Thanks, Nicole. I'm done.
Any questions from the commissioner, Mr. Pryor? Again, Mr. Pryor, thank you for your comments. Nikki, next.
Okay, our last person is Ms. Stephanie. Go ahead. Make sure you're unmuted.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Thank you. So I just want to quickly say that we have to make sure that salmon and steelhead thrive. They are both such important and meaningful parts of our ecosystem. And like all other animal species out there, they matter. So I just hope you all will always vote keeping this in mind and prioritize the well-being of fish species in Washington State. Thank you.
Again, Stephanie, thank you very much for calling in. We appreciate your comments.
Hey, Larry, it looks like Jamie Glasgow just raised their hand.
Okay, Jamie, put him on.
Go ahead, Jamie.
Yeah, thanks, Nikki. Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you.
Great. Morning, Chairman Carpenter and Commissioners. I'm Jamie Glasgow, Director of Science for Wild Fish Conservancy. Thanks again for providing this opportunity to provide testimony. Wild Fish Conservancy and our members remain concerned about a lack of transparency and public awareness about this policy revision. Regarding the public comment on the current draft, we saw no solicitation or invitation in a DFW press release to the public or in the news portion of the DFW website. Important hatchery science review and 3619 policy implementation reports that the commission had the state and the Academy of Sciences prepare remain missing from the policy review website. And without that information, the public really doesn't have a whole lot of information to work with. So for those reasons, we ask that the commission extend the public review period of the current draft 3619 through October 31st, this time with a legitimate solicitation for public input and sufficient public access to the two reports prepared specifically to inform this policy rewrite. I'd also like to reiterate a point made by Mr. Blankenship earlier, and that is that relying on HGMPs is inadequate. They do not go far enough to protect and restore wild fish populations. The bar for an HGMP is not recovery. And even if the conditions within HGMPs are achieved, and I have to say that's a big if, given what we've learned in the department's 3619 policy implementation assessment report, we won't get to salmon and steelhead recovery and to sustainable fisheries and to healthy orca populations, a place where I think we all want to be. We'll be expanding on those comments, assuming that there is sufficient time allowed for us and other members of the public to do so. Thank you.
Any questions or comments from Mr. Glasgow? I see Commissioner McIsaac's hands up, Jamie.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks for the testimony, Mr. Glasgow, and thanks for the written submissions as well. My question has to do with October 31st. So the draft, it has been out there for, so I guess it's a month and a half now. In considering extending it, we've heard 2 weeks, we've heard 30 days, and now you're looking at, you know, 45 days or anyway, another month and a half. So we have a commission meeting in October. And so going to the end of October would preclude real discussion about this by the commission then, because we're still waiting for the public testimony. And so I've read all the written public testimony, and I agree that with our policy director, Mr. Warren, that it's outstanding and it's substantial. And and I'm going to have a question for you about yours in just a moment. But anyway, my first question is, why so long, given what's already happened? Why would you pick the end of October?
Commissioner McIsaac, thanks. It's a fair question. And I guess, in short, it's to address the written testimony that you haven't received yet. I can see how it would be a little off-putting to require or request such additional time to review just a few pages of a commission policy, a proposed rewrite. But for the input to be meaningful, the two reports that I've mentioned, the Hatchery Reform Science Review and the WDFW Hatchery and Fishery Reform Policy Implementation Assessment Report, which were written specifically to inform this policy rewrite, the public needs time and access to review those documents. Collectively, they're 283 pages long. It's not an easy read. These are complex issues. The implications are huge. We've really made significant changes to the current 3619. We've lost meaningful and objective standards. There's no clear prioritization of recovery over other purposes. And without giving the public access to those reports and time to understand what's in those reports and how the recommendations within those reports line up with or don't line up with what's being proposed in this new policy, that's where we've come up with the October 31st deadline. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, well, thank you for that answer. But I'm a little confused by the lack of access to the reports. So on the science report, we saw the first draft of that. There was earlier draft materials even before then, but we had a workshop on that. And I think those materials were sent out in January. And I guess I could ask our executive assistant here, Nikki Klupfer, whether or not my impression is right that the workshop materials and the workshop audio for that February workshop on the science report have been on the website since then, shortly thereafter. And on the performance report, I can't recall what month it was that we took that. It was either March or April, maybe April. But anyway, that the materials and the audio are posted on the website then. So let me just double check that, because this could affect how much an extension is done. So Nikki, those things are on our commission website under our meeting business. Is that true or false?
As far as I know, are you talking 2020 or 2019?
2020, February workshop on the science report, the materials and the audio, and then April, the implementation performance report and the audio.
Let's see. It's not popping out at me, but I'll get back to Jamie and I'll send the information.
Okay, well.
I guess I would like to say that's kind of my point. It's not popping out at me either. And if it's not popping out for me, and I'm paying pretty close attention to this process, I worry that others in the public that are also interested, invested in salmon recovery, are not having adequate access to those documents. Certainly, it doesn't seem in the context of this public comment period on this existing draft. You know, a month ago at the commission meeting, you committed to solicit public input on this process, on this policy rewrite. We haven't seen anything come out about that. We haven't seen these two reports in the context of the current draft 3619 policy. That's what gives us real concern. I feel like we're underestimating the implications of the changes that are being proposed here. There are a lot of organizations and individuals that are very invested in salmon recovery that should have an opportunity to weigh in on this process, and I don't feel like they've been given that opportunity.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Chairman, that's all the questions.
Okay.
This is Jay. I can clarify that the materials are up there. They're just in the meeting agendas and materials, so they're like in it. They're not separate from it, so they don't necessarily pop out. So that's something that we can look into.
So there is a hatchery and fishery reform policy review page, right, on the commission website, but the documents aren't associated with that. I would just suggest that's a very logical place to put those documents.
For sure.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Jamie, thank you for your comments. Have a good day.
You as well.
Okay, that concludes open public comment, unless I missed anybody, Nikki.
Nope, we're all good.
Okay, so now it's a commission discussion about timing of the process. Who would like to lead this? Ron, how about you, Ron? Yeah.
Chair Carpenter, I'd be happy to. I know that there are other commissioners that have ideas about that. I have forwarded an idea that I've worked up with others that maybe we can share and see if this meets the intent. So a proposal that it does not get to the last comment, but it's a starting point for a conversation to add more public comment and move the tribal consultation that we had committed to earlier in the process to November and final commission decision to December 3rd through 5th meeting. This would allow us to react to the public comment now, extend it to October 12th, that's 30 days. At the October 22nd through 24th commission meeting, discuss the public comment, and then provide direction to the writing working group to draft language changes. Those language changes, revisions, we would show those to the co-managers in mid-November, and then bring that work. We would certainly provide that, put that on the website as well, once concluded and shared. And then bring that back to the commission for final decision at their December 3rd through 5th commission meeting. So as a starting point, offer that and await commission questions and or direction.
Mr. Keogh has his hand up, and then I think I'm prepared to speak to it as well.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And actually, my question was more directed toward some of the testimony that we heard. That's okay with you, Mr. Chairman?
Absolutely. Yeah, go ahead. That's fine. And we can get back to the scheduling issue.
So thank you. So we heard a couple of the folks testifying today that that the HGMP standard is insufficient for recovery. I think specifically the comments were that HGMPs are only designed to avoid or prevent extinction as opposed to recovery. And so I don't know the answer to that question. Whether that's truth, I'm wondering if maybe Ron could shed some light on that, or just kind of try to truth some of those statements. Because I mean, it is true that we're not that this redraft does not include standards upon which to judge or evaluate hatchery practices. So go ahead, Ron. Maybe can you shed some light on that for everybody?
Chair Carpenter, Commissioner Kehoe, I did see Commissioner McIsaac raise his hand and don't want to step in front of another commissioner if they had a comment relative to the question before I go.
Don, do you want to speak on that issue or another issue?
No, it's just a very issue, and it's also one that was really on the top of my mind too from the public testimony, because I think there has been a misreading of the intent here when we repeatedly hear that the HGMPs here are only going to prevent extinction, and we need to do better than that. And I don't believe that's the intent, and I can cite a couple of reasons as to why. When I pulled it up, I could maybe read why. How they could maybe come to that conclusion, but it's certainly when this is being discussed in the writing work group and discussions at the Fish Committee, I think also that the intent here was not that. It was that these HGMPs should pass muster with the National Marine Fisheries Service in terms of whenever those stocks, certainly we don't want to go below that. But that these are our HGMPs to mesh all of the objectives and purposes that are described in the policy, which includes recovery in the purpose statement and includes guidelines 1, 2, and 3 that get to doing better than just prohibiting extinction. That's a reason why we ask for HGMPs for places that aren't even listed. Summer Chinook on the Columbia, for example, Yellowtail Bay. The idea here was to have a good hatchery genetic management plan that takes care of the genetics across the state and does all of these good things that are described in the policy, not just prohibit extinction. So I would say that when I look at the purpose statement, it's got recovery in it. And when I look at those 1, 2, and 3 things that are to be balanced, they call for sustainable fisheries and some stronger things. So given that, though, I can see where people, when I read that this should be consistent with the NIMS ESA business, that maybe it's not clear that that's the floor. And if they read it as that's the goal, the only goal, then maybe we do, and I've read the written input too, that maybe there is area to improve the language here.
If I could speak to it for a minute, Ron. I listened pretty carefully to this, and one of the things that jumped out at me is that these people were paying attention. The people just made public comment, and I do think in a lot of cases like this, perception is reality as it relates to the HGMP analysis. And I guess I hate to keep using maybe COVID-19 as a reason for things to get stalled out. But it is a reason for things to get stalled out. It has affected a lot of people's lives, and in a lot of negative ways. And so I could see why people might be preoccupied doing other things, trying to stay well and maybe not doing the diligence that they would normally do if there was not this pandemic. And I'm just going to, the four people, all the comments were very, very good. But from that perspective of concern for awareness and transparency, Lee Blankenship, Jessica Helsley, David Moskowitz, and Jamie Glasgow, I thought they were pretty clear about the awareness and transparency issue. And I this week had a personal call from, as you know, from Jock White, Long Live the Kings, about his organization's not having an opportunity to make comment. And I guess to wrap up my comment here, I think it's absolutely imperative that we get this right. And I don't know that October 31st is absolutely necessary, but personally, I don't think October 12th is long enough. And I'm just concerned that we really have to go the extra mile on public comment and transparency, or this could backfire on us, and I don't think any of us want to see that. So I think we need to go somewhere near the last week of October, or it could be a problem.
Mr. Chairman? Mr. Chairman, you're muted.
My apologies. Trying to be quiet here. Commissioner McKaysey.
Yes, thank you. It's an important question here, and you know, this process has gone through a lot of delays already, and I know we've said that on some other policies as well, but let me speak in favor of a 30-day extension. I think it's important that we have the step that the commission gives some direction on what we've heard in public comment. And maybe we've already had some reactions here, but it certainly doesn't rise to providing any direction to the work group to change any of the language yet. And that might be inappropriate anyway. We're going to extend public comment. We need to not do that until that public comment period's over, or someone's going to come up with something we haven't thought of. So if we did do that, it would enable us to discuss it at the October meeting. We've made some commitments to the co-managers to do some things. And after all the delays that have occurred, I think it would be good to, when we say something, that we do it or we get very close to doing it. If we waited until October 31st, we don't have a meeting in November. So when would there be discussion for what to tell the work group to write some language revisions on? That wouldn't be until December. And then this would go to January. And, you know, when do we end public comment is a good question as well. We just went through this on the Columbia River, where we had a schedule to vote on that in August at our August meeting, and decided let's just close out public comment then and vote on it in September. And what happened on public comment? We got more public comment after we closed it than we did before. So I think if we're going to look at a schedule adjustment now, we ought to come up with one that we can live with and that we can stick to and not be altered again. Now, this has come before the commission I don't know how many times now, where we have adjusted the schedule. So it's something that is on my mind anyway, coming to a conclusion on this.
I think, Commissioner McKaysey, we have two other commissioners that want to speak, but it also is possible we could have a meeting in November if need be, a short Zoom meeting. But Commissioner Linville and Commissioner Anderson, please, in that order.
My ears certainly perk up when somebody who's engaged in the process says that they have trouble finding the documents. So I would like to know, you know, if that's the case. I think that's a really good reminder for us on every topic to make sure that whatever the public needs to see to be engaged is super available. I was a user of the department's website before I was a commissioner, and I remember many frustrated moments trying to find documents. It's certainly much better. But if it is the case that those documents were hard to find, then I think an extension is pretty reasonable.
Thank you, Commissioner Linvo. Commissioner Anderson, and then Commissioner Vice Chair Baker.
Yes, I'd like to speak to the time frame, and I don't have a problem with some extension. However, I do have a concern about it being pushed back into December, January timeframe. That to me is not needed. I think I'll be honest, is that I believe that the information has been out there enough that most people know it's there and they've looked at it. And to me, it's to some extent trying to buy some more time. And so I honestly, yes, could have been out there better, sure. But, you know, I think the documents and the information's been out there, and these people who have been reviewing it have been all over that. They know what's in there. Having said that, I'm okay with some extension and being able to ensure that there's an opportunity. And I think the October 12th time frame, frankly, isn't bad. That's you know, 30 days.
Thank you, Commissioner Anderson. Commissioner Baker.
Well, I was going to make the same suggestion that you just made, Chair Carpenter. I think we are threading a needle between sort of jamming people and trying to push a proposal without getting or having adequate consideration of the comments. But the other thing I want to note is that 2020 has been a bad year in many ways, and one of the bad things that might happen this year is that we are going to lose the brain trust of our commission. If four commissioners go off at the end of the year, and if we keep pushing really complicated policies like this out, we run the risk of further delay. And in that case, that would be subjecting up to four brand new people to final decision making on something that they will not be prepared to do. So I think we need to make it a firm goal to get this policy in place in one way or another by the end of the year. And if that means having a couple of an hour meeting, say on November 6th, I think this issue is well important enough for us to do that. And then we will have the time to extend the deadline to the 30th, if that's what the people who know what they're talking about think is necessary, and respond appropriately.
Thank you, Commissioner Baker. Rodden, I'm sorry, there you are, okay.
Chair Carpenter, thank you. I may be stepping out of my lane. If I am, somebody can whack me upside the head next time you see me. So I have a possible revision. It's going to take some time with the comments maybe that we've received to date, as well as further comments with a 30-day period for the writing group to make any edits to the document. I've received a couple of emails while we're here. The advantage of Zoom is that the people who testify can continue to communicate with me and all of us pretty readily. And so I think that if we were to extend to October 12th, make some edits, put the edited document back on the website, and then take some additional public comment. We share that draft with the co-managers in November. Still have to schedule that date, but share that with the co-managers. We're going to take verbal comments from them. They at least that's how they have commented in the past. There may be some minor tweaks there, but we'll just have to wait and see. I can then present in December comments that we received in the first 30 days, how the changes were made, the comments between when we repost and you got to give us a week prior to the December meeting. We could pick an end date. Nikki and Shaylee have been fantastic at keeping comments separate and putting them in themes. It happens pretty quickly. We could come back and I could share that with all of you in December. I don't think that, I'm guessing that the edits that we make in this first round are going to likely be addressed, and the comments that come later are likely fewer or less significant. That's a guess, but that might give the commission an option. Certainly gives the public a greater period of time, not only to look at what we have on the as a draft policy now, the minor revisions or revisions that might get made with the 30-day extension, and then they get to actually see and comment on that considered at the December 3rd through 5th commission meeting for final decision.
Any other commissioners who haven't commented on this issue choose to? Okay. Commissioner Thorburn.
Commissioner Kehoe asked a question at the beginning, and then we started talking about the schedule, and I didn't hear any response to Commissioner Kehoe's question. It was on content and some of the testimony that we've heard. You know, it kind of gets to a little bit about what we're talking about. We're hearing from public, and I'd like to hear response to it. Commissioner Kehoe's question, as I recall, and Bob may need to step in, was about the concern about HGMPs being simply establishing standards that are the floor, that only ensure that our hatchery management, genetic management specifically, will prevent extinction. And I was interested in that question because I think, as I listened to Ron earlier, it really didn't sound like that's how we deal with the HGMPs, that the scientific concerns, both the ecologic risk and genetic risk, are very much taken into consideration in the HGMPs. And one of the things that we've looked at in this process is the importance of establishing standards, and we're calling them HGMPs, and monitoring, a better monitoring of our hatcheries, which I think also came out in the testimony concerns that we haven't done that previously. So I'd be real interested in Ron talking about that a little bit in response to Bob's original question.
Chair Carpenter, Commissioner Thorburn, Commissioner Kehoe, thanks for the question. I'll try to address it the best I can. I I heard Commissioner McIsaac say that he would want to go back and reread some materials relative to the HGMPs, and some of where I would step in is reread the hatchery risks document that NOAA serves under. It doesn't make explicit reference to the Hatchery Scientific Review Group, but it talks about some of the principles that they've adopted that were similar, same as the currently available science. I don't believe that a standard that does not impede recovery is just trying to keep things from headed towards extinction. I think it is to allow for recovery actions to take hold. So I believe that an HGMP is working towards that solution and those solutions. So I would answer the question like that, that I think we move beyond just a floor. I think we're moving towards assuring that we're monitoring the risks of the stocks and with from the risks that the hatcheries place on wild populations that allow for those recovery actions to occur, not just to keep them from becoming extinct. I would say that I too want to go back and reread some of the hatchery risk document that we have been working under with NOAA, and it's an extensive document. I think it's important for me to be able to answer that question more thoroughly. That's all I have for you today.
Yeah, Commissioner Kehoe?
Go ahead, Commissioner Thorburn, follow up.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I agree with you, Ron. I think that the testimony today did raise some questions that we all should take a look at, because certainly as I've gone through the review, I've been really interested in this whole issue of establishing the standards and the monitoring process to ensure that we are doing both or attentive to both the genetic and ecologic issues in our hatchery management that assure recovery. So homework for me as well. Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the response, Ron. And I do think that we need to kind of study, drill down on that issue. Rereading the document seems.
You are cutting out a little bit there, Bob.
Okay, is that better?
Yeah, it's like the tail end of everything you're saying. It cuts out.
How's this now?
Sounds okay.
Okay, so let me talk. Let me go back to the process to Ron. Let me just say, as far as a commissioner that has a full-time job, Heath Heikkila mentioned that we are volunteers, and we are volunteers. There is a sense of, with the Zoom platform, a bit of a meeting creep, and so I think we need to be sensitive to that. But at the same time, provide open and transparent and opportunities for the public. So Ron, getting back to your kind of alternative proposal, would that call then for another commission meeting in November, kind of a special meeting, or does your alternative avoid that?
Chair Carpenter, Commissioner Kehoe, I do not believe my alternative causes for a special meeting in November. I think that if you extend now to a 30-day comment period, allow the policy writing group to come up with some possible modifications to bring back in the October meeting. That allows us, under full advancement of the commission, to take that to the co-managers and post it and come back in December for a final briefing on comment periods, the changes, and how the co-manager meeting progressed for your consideration at the December 3rd through 5th meeting. I don't believe that it adds to the meeting schedules for the commission.
Okay, thank you, Ron. Go ahead.
Just for me, I support Ron's alternative.
Okay, Commissioner McIsaac, I think you can, well, I see another hand up, but I think we need to wrap this up. We can beat this all day. There's different perspectives on it, but I think we're fairly close. So I see McIsaac, and then it looks like Commissioner Graybill, and then we'll wrap this up.
Yeah, I speak in support of Ron's option there. I think it provides the public an additional benefit of being able to see another draft. That's a very good public process, but we have to schedule the final decision in December and not have that leak into January or February or somewhere else. And that's been our chronic problem. This does mean we'd be taking public comment in December on the revised that the public has seen. And we would hear from the tribal co-managers that all fits fine. It does not fit the paradigm of never making a decision at the time what we've just heard public comment. So we're going to have to accept that as a new thing to get this done by the end of the year under our current membership. If we don't, the commitments we've made to the tribal co-manager are going to be subject to extreme criticism by them about, once again, we hear something from you all and it just doesn't happen. And I would not like to hear that criticism.
Thank you, Commissioner McIsaac. Commissioner Graybill.
Thank you, Larry. I just wanted to say I support Ron's option as well. And
okay.
This moving. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Any objection from the commission to move on? Okay. So moved. We're going to go in now to